It's time for the VolQuest podcast, where we dissect the biggest news items of the week.
Hey, good Tuesday morning, everybody. Welcome into the VolQuest podcast. I'm Eric Kane with Austin Price, Rob Lewis, and Brent Hubbs. Exterior Home Solution, the presenting sponsor of the show. Been local and trusted here at East Tennessee since 1999. If you have a need for roofing, siding, garage, any type of makeover, give Exterior Home Solutions a look today. You can pick up the phone and dial 865-524-5888 for a free estimate or visit them online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. Tennessee falls to Georgia over the weekend. UTEP coming up this week. It will be senior day. Not a whole lot of juice for this week. And, of course, Tennessee's going to finish the regular season with Vanderbilt. What everybody will be paying attention to coming up later tonight is the college football playoff standings and, you know, where Tennessee is there and what needs to happen for Tennessee. And we'll get into that here in a moment. But looking back to the loss over the weekend to Georgia, Austin, you and I spoke post-game, and you know, Tennessee moved the football. Tennessee ran the football. But it had a half where it was kept off the scoreboard. And for the first time this year, the defense looked very mortal, and the defense had a bad day. Accumulation of that stuff together means Georgia 31, Tennessee 17, and kind of a bad night for the defense not to have a good night, I guess.
Yeah, you picked the worst night you could for the defense to struggle to get into the backfield to create any pressure at all on Carson Beck. And, you know, the secondary in turn, you know, did not have a good night as well. And so, again, you got to rinse it and wash it and just move on from it. And, you know, get ready to play UTEP, get ready to play Vanderbilt, try to finish this thing out 10-2, and then see where you know, kind of land. I mean, you know, the fact is, by the time you end the UTEP game Saturday, one of the bullets that you may need to have happen, you know, or that could possibly happen that would help you would be Florida beating Ole Miss. You know, that game will start 45 minutes before Tennessee does. So you'll have an idea, okay, well, that one helped us or that one, you know, hurt us or whatever else. You know, so, I mean, like, I think ultimately you just got to take care of, you know, your own self and, you know, see kind of where it lands because now you don't control your own destiny.
You don't control your own destiny, no. But, I mean, there's not, like, I think I heard Brent say this earlier in the week, like, there's not 12 things that have to go right for Tennessee to get in the playoffs.
Correct, just one thing. One of a myriad of things.
Potentially one thing, this thing or that thing. But end of the day, Rob, Tennessee does not control its own destiny. I think you need to go out there against UTEP and win the way you need to, score a lot of points, look like the dominant team that you should be over UTEP, and, again, kind of leave no doubt.
Yeah, I mean, beating them 52-7 isn't going to get you any brownie points, but beating them, you know, 30-13 and kind of looking bad until the second half is going to hurt you, you know, fairly or not. I mean, it just is. So, like you say, you need to look, you know, you have to look like you look, and you know, I know it's going to hurt Tennessee in the rankings just by the fact that, you know, the margin between everybody is so thin that you're comparing now, but. I think fans have a hard time seeing it. And you guys might disagree, but big picture wise, if you're, you know, somebody, you know, from outside the footprint looking at that game Saturday night, I don't think that loss really hurts Tennessee all that much. I mean, they have to drop, but I'm just talking about what you thought about Tennessee as a football team before that game. I doubt really changed that much if you were watching from Nebraska.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing is we saw from week one to week two in the rankings the quote course correction, right? BYU jumps in front of Tennessee, Indiana jumps in front, and the committee talked about, you know, fixing basically a wrong or a course correction. But Georgia took a huge fall. So the question is, do they course correct Georgia? And if they do, does that mean Tennessee doesn't get punished as bad, Rob, as you were saying there? I think that's going to be something to watch later tonight when it comes out. And I'm not trying to pick on the committee. They have a thankless job. Somebody's going to be mad at the end of the day. It's always going to be that way. So I get all of that. I do think that your talking points move. They move, right? The needle moves on the talking points every week. And what those talking points look like this week are going to be really interesting. And who gets favor and who doesn't get favor is pretty fascinating too, because, you know, the Texas resume is just not very good, but Texas is so high up in the rankings. It doesn't matter even if they lose, I don't think, in that last week, because there's such a love affair for Texas that remains there when you look at their resume, it doesn't equate to some of these other teams. I think Penn State's in a similar category. And I think those are the head scratchers that, you look at and go, man, it's just hard to get a bead and figure out how to project somebody or what who should be there or what they're really looking at when they're trying to make these decisions on where people are ranked.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. And let's face it. I mean, Brent's right. Texas is high, but let's say they do lose to Texas A&M. Well, then Texas A&M is a two-loss team, right? You know? And
well, Texas A&M would benefit much greater from the win than Texas is going to be punished for the loss.
Agreed.
Texas is ranked right now.
I agree.
And
Texas's resumes, I mean, they don't have a top 25 win. Their best win's Vanderbilt. I mean,
and your only shot, you lost at home to Georgia and did look great doing it. I mean, two score. And I'm not trying to be a homer. I mean, the Tennessee score at Georgia, that one really – I mean, that was a one-score football game. Texas wasn't in it at home against Georgia.
Yeah.
Of course, the win on the road to Michigan, of course, that game really kind of lets them down. Same as Tennessee, Oklahoma, same as Tennessee, NC State. You thought those were going to be big-time matchups entering the season. Indiana plays Ohio State. That's one that everybody should be paying attention to. Austin and I were talking about this earlier in the week, and we might disagree a little bit, but – how much influence does the Big Ten have? Because they want four teams in there as well. If Ohio State, which is not as dominant as previous Ohio State teams, but obviously a really good team, just smacks Indiana, would that shrink the schedule being 100? I mean, Indiana should not be in the playoffs. Say they win that game by 3-4 touchdowns. Indiana should not be in the playoffs. Indiana should be knocked out. A lot of people believe it'll be a close game, and so we'll have to see. But say Ohio State smacks Indiana, how do you guys see the committee – looking at that the next week with the rankings?
You mean the Big Ten heavy committee led by the Michigan AD? I mean, true. Like, I that's where I think some of this gets, probably a little bit muddied. Do I think Indiana, if they were, I think somebody tweeted out the other day, like, if you put BYU up against these X amount of SEC teams, would they be favored? Same thing with Indiana. I mean, if Indiana was going against Ole Miss, Tennessee, Alabama, heck, even LSU at 6-4, kind of like, what would the line be? Like, do we really think that Indiana would be favored in any of these games? I would tell you no. Again, though, they've won every game on their schedule at this point, so they've done what they're supposed to do. And, we'll see if they can, play with Ohio State this weekend at the Horseshoe, which I think they can, because, you look at Nebraska. Nebraska turned around and lost to UCLA after almost beating Ohio State at the Horseshoe. So, Ohio State's yet to put that like juggernaut game together where they just play really well and clobber somebody. Maybe that's this week. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, I think that big pitch, what happens over the next couple of weeks is going to be really fascinating, and there's going to be a lot of gnashing of the teeth and a lot of hate tweets put out there and a lot of people posting email addresses for committee members and all those types of things, right? That's regardless of who gets in, who doesn't, that's going to happen with your fan bases. I think if you're an AD, a head coach, and you're the commissioner of the SEC, I think you've got to look hard at your scheduling and what should be a benefit to you. How should you schedule? Do you add an extra conference game? Do you say, hey, you know what? We're not playing any more conference games because we're beating each other up and it's costing ourselves. I mean, Megan, if you want to put back up Indiana's schedule, that's a pretty nice road to hoe right there when you look at it, right? I mean, you thought Michigan would be a tough game for them. It turns out they're not, okay? You knew Ohio State would be a hard game, but the rest of that's not real hard. I mean, I don't think anybody thought UCLA was going to be a good team. I don't think anybody thought Northwestern was going to be a good team. Michigan State's, not very – I mean, that's a pretty favorable schedule for Indiana. Now, to their credit, they played the schedule, they played it well, and they've won every game they're supposed to win. We'll see what happens to them this week. But that's a little bit like Texas's schedule. When you look at Texas's schedule, I mean, their hardest game was at home against Georgia, and they got walloped, and the rest of their schedule was pretty favorable in their first year in the conference.
And both of them hanging their hat on a win over a 5-5 Michigan team.
Yeah. And both of them seem to be getting a lot of credit for that win.
Yeah, barely they think Harbaugh's still coaching up there.
I mean, they really are. The same way Ole Miss doesn't seem to be getting punished – as hard for losing to Kentucky at home as you think they would be, right?
And now an unranked LSU team.
Yeah. that they lost to on the road. So again, what is the storyline from the committee tonight? Is it quality wins, Rob? Quality losses? What's the story?
I mean, you can go, depending on your perspective, you can come up with a narrative for every team. But just, I mean, staying in this league, I mean, like the thing, like where Tennessee is going to, who they're going to be measured against. You just mentioned Ole Miss. I mean, the two things that baffle me, if you're just looking at Tennessee and Ole Miss, and they're going to be compared ad nauseum. I mean, they're very similar. I don't get why Tennessee's loss at Arkansas apparently looks to be more harmful than a home loss to Kentucky. And why a home win over Alabama is valued less than a home win over a Georgia team, both with two losses. As AP just said, that win over LSU for Ole Miss, you know, that's looking more and more like an Oklahoma win for Tennessee now.
Yeah, I mean, what they've said it a couple of different times throughout the first 2 weeks of the rankings, who you lose to and how you lose matters. So Tennessee lost to Georgia, which, to Brent's point, if they put Georgia way, if they course correct and put Georgia way back up there, then it shouldn't hurt Tennessee that bad. But going back to what you just said, Rob, I mean, again, Ole Miss, we've said this for weeks, they got the worst loss of anybody in this conversation.
And it just doesn't seem to kill them like that Arkansas loss kills Tennessee, and it seemed to be negated by a couple of wins. And well, those wins don't look as good anymore. I mean, that's a sliding scale. It works both ways.
Well, I enjoyed somebody saying in one of the deals that, you know, that was a couple of fourth down conversions away from Ole Miss winning at home against Kentucky.
Yeah.
What does that mean? You know, now at the same time too, let's be really honest here. If Tennessee holds a 14-3 lead midway through the third quarter at Arkansas, we're doing a different podcast today because Tennessee's got to beat Vanderbilt to go to Atlanta in the SEC championship game. That's, and that is the story of this league in particular, but it is the story of college football. I mean, what happens in week four is a huge deal, or week five is a huge deal. And, you know, you don't have to be perfect, but you got to find ways when you don't have your best stuff to beat teams that you're superior to. And Tennessee, talent-wise, is superior to Arkansas, and they didn't get it done on the road, and that's why they're in this beauty pageant here down the stretch.
Certainly the season's not over. Tennessee's very much in the thick of a college football playoff race, and that's going to continue on for a couple of weeks. I mean, Tennessee's going to beat UTEP this weekend, and then, you know, Tennessee will need to go on the road to beat Vanderbilt, which, of course, will be more like a Tennessee home game. But a couple of questions I've seen already in the last couple of days since the loss to Georgia, and this is more of an offseason conversation, but I wanted to get just brief your thoughts on this. Tennessee 10-2 misses the playoffs. Like, how do you view this season? Because coming into the season, you pick 10 wins, you know, probably a loss to Georgia, maybe a loss to Alabama, or maybe a loss on the road to Oklahoma or whatever. Most everybody's still saying 10-2 is a really, really good season. Say in this scenario, Tennessee doesn't make the playoffs but finishes 10-2. How are you viewing this season?
I don't know how the other guys feel, but I think it would be a disappointment if they don't make the playoffs. But I think it would be a continued growth under Josh Heupel. And, you know, again, I think Tennessee fans sometimes forget where they were for 15 years just because they went 11-2 2 years ago. I mean, I think, you know, to go to have a double-digit regular season wins two out of the last 3 years – with an 8-4 sandwiched in between that's really remarkable considering where they were just a few years ago. But at the same time, you can also say that it would be a disappointment based off the fact that you lost to a team in Arkansas that you weren't supposed to, or that you shouldn't lose to. And you didn't make the, you know, 12 team playoff at 10-2. So I think both things can be true. I think you can still see growth while it's still a disappointment.
Well, I thought at 10-2, they'd make the playoff. I mean, I thought a 10-2 team in this league would
still may.
And it may, and they still may. That's right. But I didn't think it would be as this – I didn't think you'd need this kind of help or be talking about this kind of stuff. So that's why I think this is a little bit of a – it's a 10-2 is a good year, but, you know, it's Rob, it's a 10-2, but what could have been had you, you know, taken care of business against a team you were better than. I'm not going to compare it to the 2016 season. You know, but that was a but, you know what I mean? Because they gagged at South Carolina. Tennessee
and
didn't
Vanderbilt.
And Vanderbilt. But the South Carolina one's was the real killer at that point for trying to go to Atlanta in that game. So I don't think it's a bad season. I don't think it's a disappointment. I think it's a credit, Rob, to Josh Heupel and his coaching staff that we're having this conversation, that the thought that 10-2 might be in some people's eyes a disappointing season.
I think fans can be disappointed. I get it. Disappointed that you didn't make the playoffs, but it's another step in the right direction. I mean, Tennessee is nationally relevant. 3 years from being just a joke and a laughing stock and a punchline for cash in McDonald's bags. I mean, Tennessee is in the national conversation every week for the college football playoff. I mean, they're whether they make it or not, they're there. They've been there all year long. Tennessee has won 10 games in the regular season two times since 2003. They did it 2 years ago, and they're on pace to do it again. I mean, I get, being upset about losing to Arkansas, but this thing is, it's trending upward, and there's nothing you can say to dispute that.
And again, it's not like 12 things have to happen. Like, of course, one thing or this thing or that thing, and, as Grant would remind us if he was on this show, that college football is wild and wacky, and who knows what the story is going to be this Saturday. So very much right there on the doorstep. We'll see. I want to get back to this Georgia game, then I want to talk some hoops for a moment, but real quick before we hit a reset, let's kind of go around the room. Where do we think Tennessee will be ranked tonight when those come out? Remember, Georgia was ranked 12th last week, but it was left out because the group of five had to get one of those seeds. So where do you think Tennessee will be ranked tonight, Austin?
Probably about the same. I think they'll be 13th after they'll be the first team out and probably ranked 12th.
Yeah, I was gonna say mirror, just like Georgia last week, 11th, 12th ranked, and first.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I think that's where it's going to be. And then you're sitting here and it's a choose your own adventure book here for the last 2 weeks, right? Of the standpoint of what you need to have happen. If this happens, then you're good. If this doesn't happen, then this needs to happen. And that's kind of where Tennessee's going to be at here for the last 2 weeks. And then obviously Tennessee's got to go beat Tennessee. They got to take care of themselves. They cannot play with a hangover this week. And then obviously they're going to have to go to Vanderbilt and deal with a running quarterback, and that Vanderbilt team is going to be ready to roll. So Tennessee's going to have to be ready to play in that one as well. So I do like the fact the last two games are early starts for Tennessee. I don't think that's a bad thing. But Tennessee's going to have to be a mature football team here the last 2 weeks and not get caught up into that. And then I'll be fascinated to see how comfortable Josh Heupel is selling his team. How much is he going to lobby, or is he going to sell? Because he's going to start to get, are you a playoff team? What's he going to say? Well, that's up to the committee. Or is he going to stand on the table and really try to beat the drum marketing his team? Or how's he going to handle that part of it? Because we've not seen that. But I think there's going to be some of that probably has to take place here over the course of the next couple of weeks.
He'll be real comfortable hanging 50 in Nashville if he can.
Oh, sure.
That part of it, he'll be real comfortable with.
There's no marketing there.
I was going to say, not that he doesn't want to stick up for his guys or anything, but that, Austin, that's not necessarily his personality. But to Brent's point, I think it absolutely needs to be. He needs to, these post-game press conference, he needs to be, making his pitch for Tennessee to be in the playoffs. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, I think for right now, it's easy to say that's up to the committee. But, I think the closer you get to it, probably after this weekend, you start to see him probably ratchet it up. At least I think you should, the problem is how do you do it? How do you sell outside just saying, yes, we belong, we deserve? I mean, how do you make the pitch, that's more than just saying, sure, yeah, we belong, that's the hard part, I think, for all coaches.
I mean, you had Eli Drinkwitz telling everybody they're still on the hunt there a week after putting on T-shirts that said they were going bowling. So, there's coaches that do different things in different ways.
Well, and listen, I mean, Josh Heupel he pointed out post-game at Georgia through all of his anger and fight song music that he was, he had a good football team. And I think that's all you can say after a loss. But I'm talking about after wins here. After this week win, do you have to start selling that and talking about that a little bit? Having some talking points about your resume and about your accomplishments. And certainly after that last weekend, if you take care of business against Vanderbilt, I think you got to sell it. You're going to have to try to sell it and sell your team there with some factual data. I'm with Austin. I mean, just saying, yeah, we belong is not selling it. You're going to have to sell it harder than that. And how comfortable is Josh Heupel in doing that?
I mean, I think the biggest thing too for Tennessee is how do you sell it? I mean, you can say, yeah, we beat Alabama, but how do you, I mean, like, the number of quality wins aren't going to be as good, but the quality of losses aren't that bad. Like, how do you say, you know, our quality of losses, look, we, you know, we lost on the road to Arkansas, they're going to a bowl, and we lost to Georgia, they're, you know, inside the, you know, the top 12, blah, 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 blah. You know, not everybody can say that and their losses. I think that's what you've got to say. You can't specifically say, come out and say, Ole Miss lost to two teams that aren't even ranked, you know, and you know, Kentucky, who might have four or five wins.
No, but I think you stand up and you say, hey, you look at our resume compared to some other two-loss resumes around the country, okay, or compared to some other resumes around the country, strength of schedule that we played, wins versus top 25 versus some other people's wins versus top 25 teams.
Yeah.
And without saying, hey, our resume is better than Texas. But you say our resume is better with Texas. You just don't mention Texas's name. And I think that's where you got to be savvy in how you go about doing that and go about it. Now, first and foremost, you got to go on the field and win the game. Your marketing plan doesn't work if you don't execute on the field. And Tennessee's got to go out, flush this past week, and take care of business first and foremost.
Tennessee led 10-0 in the first quarter. And then what went wrong? I'm going to ask the guys that here in just a moment as we continue on here with the Tuesday morning edition of the VolQuest podcast, but first, a word from our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions.
Hey, Sterling, man, come on, we got a roof to replace.
Let's go, baby. Let's go.
Hey, Sterling, you ready to go to the top?
Man, I can't believe you guys been doing this for 25 years. Oh, baby.
Now, this is what I call a rooftop party.
We have 25 years experience in roofing and exterior renovations, and we're backed by the best.
Are you ready to get your rooftop party started? Give us a call, 865-524-5888.
As always, we want to give a shout out to our friends, Exterior Home Solutions. That phone number is 865-524-5888. You can visit them online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. They've been local and trusted since 1999 here in East Tennessee. Hey guys, I want to give a shout out to Price Picks. We've been doing this campaign. We did it last football season. We're doing it this football season as well. We've been doing it over on the GameQuest podcast. But if you're unfamiliar with what Price Picks is, you can play $5 and you're going to get $50 instantly if you put in that promo code VQ. Promo code VQ over pricepicks.com/VQ. What it is it's the largest independently owned daily fantasy sports platform in North America. Easiest and most exciting way to play DFS. Just you against the number. So instead of battling thousands of other players, including pros and sharks, all you have to do is pick more than or less than on 2-6 player stat projections, and you watch the winnings roll in. So, college football weekend coming up, you can do a couple Tennessee, you can do Nico, Dylan Sampson, you can do Jalen Milroe of Alabama, Carson Beck of Georgia, whatever the case may be, and they're going to have a stat projection. All you do is you're picking more than or less than. You have to have at least 2, no more than 6. You can do the NFL, you can do other sports as well, all that and more over at Price Picks. And again, watch the winnings roll in. So play $5, get $50 instantly by putting in that promo code VQ, promo code VQ at pricepicks.com/VQ. Tennessee led 10-0 at the end of the first quarter, outscored 31-7 the rest of the way. We know about defense in the middle of the field. We've talked and wrote about all that. I want to talk offense. Offensively, Brent, what went wrong for Tennessee in the final three quarters?
Oh, I think Georgia, after that first drive, said, you know what? We're not worried so much about you throwing it over our heads, okay? So we're not going to give you a chance to try to – we're going to try to limit the chances of doing that. We're going to ramp it up and bring pressure. We're going to squat a little bit more. We're going to walk our corners up. We're not going to give you some of these easy access throws that Tennessee had on that opening drive. We're going to try to take that away, and we're going to heat the quarterback up. We can't win this game playing it any other way. And I think when you go back and look – I mean, Nico was not sacked on the opening drive. I mean, other than the one scramble that he did a really good job on to get the first down, I don't know that he was really pressured much on the first drive. But after that, the pressure was there, and it was very different. I think Georgia just got super aggressive after that opening drive and just said, "Hey, we're not going to play that way. We may not be as good in the secondary as we've been, but we're going to take our chances with our secondary by using our front seven to get to you and not give you the chances to hit anything developing down the field."
Rob, Tennessee scored on its opening possession. It had a 27-yard touchdown run in the second quarter. by Dylan Sampson, where he was untouched. Boo Carter set up Tennessee with great field position. The Vols settled for a 51-yard field goal there, sandwiched in between. What changed second quarter on, or really, I guess, second half where they were shut out? What changed for that offense?
Well, I mean, I think Hubbard nailed it. I mean, I probably couldn't have, you know, described it as well as he could on a granular level. But just to me, I overrated it big time. And Tennessee's wide receivers, man, just did not make plays. I mean, people are frothing at the mouth at Nico. I mean, if you can show me a bunch of guys he missed, you know, I'll shake your hand. I mean, I don't think he had a lot of help. I mean, you think about the ball Dante Thornton dropped. I mean, that's not even a big time play. I mean, that's if they're just buying your books, you need to catch that one. And to me, I thought Tennessee would just have guys be, you know, Brew McCoy break a tackle, Dante Thornton, you know, get deep beak and get behind somebody and make a contested play of the ball. To me, and that didn't really change, Eric. To me, that's just what you know. I guess, like Herbert's saying, I think Georgia just either realized it or dared Tennessee to do it. And that's the matchup, Georgia's secondary. Because it's, I mean, they may be super talented, and they are with guys like KJ Bolden, but they're still young outside of Malachi Starks. I mean, that's not like a long in the tooth veteran secondary that is just going to overwhelm you with experience. I mean, that was a matchup that I really thought Tennessee would not just beat Georgia over the head with, but could really make some plays. And they just did not. I mean, not a single explosive play over 20 yards, and that to me, you know, the lack of sacks were, you know, a killer, but not having a single pass play over 20 yards. If you'd have told me that going in, I'm surprised Tennessee kept it as close as they did.
Also, you look at defense, middle of the field, we made note of that. It felt like it all started up front. Tennessee wasn't generating pressure. They were max protecting earlier in the football game. They went away from that. And it felt like Hubs and I talked about this on the rewind. It felt like the motion, they were scheming it up to go at, you know, Will Brooks or a specific player at points and times in this football game. What did you see on that was different from Tennessee's defense? That's been, you know, that's not the defense that we've seen all year long.
Well, I feel like the linebacker play is, you know, been a touchdown the last few weeks. So I think that, you know, kind of continued in this game. Tennessee's lack of pressure with the front four. I didn't feel like Tennessee blitzed a whole lot. I felt like they tried to get home, you know, with just your four down linemen a bunch, and they weren't able to do it. And then, you know, the safety play was poor. I thought Jermon McCoy played okay. I thought Ricky Gibson played pretty well. But this is a defense that, again, just picked the wrong week to have, you know, a bad game. And I don't think it was just one in particular unit. I thought, you know, just as a whole, they struggled.
So for Tennessee, how do you fix some of these things we're talking about right now, knowing there's only two regular season games left? How do you fix that? I mean, is this more of off-season stuff? Is this more a new year? I know you're kind of all who you are in some aspects, but Brent, how do you fix this stuff going forward to be a better football team for the last two games and then hopefully, you know, some games in the playoffs?
Well, I mean, I think up front, you just got to play better. I mean, you're a veteran group. You just didn't play your best, and you didn't have to play superhuman. But you had to play well up front, and Tennessee did not play well up front. They got blocked. Josh Heupel said that in his Monday press conference. Got blocked. Didn't get off blocks. Weren't disruptive enough. Didn't play in the backfield. You know, they did a nice job against the run. But Georgia's not a very good running team. You could not let Carson Beck get comfortable. And once he threw the 38-yard pass to Dominic Lovett, where James Pierce jumped off sides and Tennessee somehow just kind of let that ball get in there with three guys around Lovett. Carson Beck was a different football player. We talk about Nico's growth since the scramble at Alabama. In that particular game, that was the play that got Carson Beck comfortable and got him rolling. And he was really good after that. And Tennessee didn't do anything to make him uncomfortable. I mean, I think you got to be aggressive. You got to blitz some, you know, maybe simplify. I don't know if they're asking their linebackers to do too much. You know, do you have a little paralysis by analysis out there? I don't know. I mean, Keenan Peely's not walking back through the door. They played enough games without Keenan Peely right now that you ought to be able to play and be okay, you know, and not be totally confused there. I give Georgia credit. I mean, they attack some areas where I'm surprised Tennessee hasn't been attacked the last couple of weeks more than what they have been. And Georgia took full advantage of that. I can promise you UTEP's going to try to throw it to the tight end in the middle of the field on Saturday. right? They're going to try to do some things with multiple tight ends and motions and shifts to try to get you misaligned and try to get some favorable matchups. You got to get after the quarterback, and you're going to have to get after the quarterback against Vanderbilt, which is a bit of a challenge because he runs around. But, I mean, you got to get back to your identity up front, and Tennessee's not played as well up front the last 3 weeks as they did early in the year. They got to play better.
So Tennessee and UTEP coming up this weekend. It'll be senior day on Rocky Top. And then, of course, Tennessee will finish the regular season at Vanderbilt the following week. And we'll see exactly what the playoff committee is going to say later tonight. And, of course, next week and all that and more. Tennessee still a whole lot in front of them. And, you know, depending on what happens over the next 2 weeks, maybe playoff bound. So we'll have to see. Let's shift gears here. The last couple of minutes of the podcast. Let's talk basketball. Rob, Tennessee improves to 4-0, cruise to a win over Austin Peay as it should have on Sunday, shooting 63% from the field. Your overall thoughts on Tennessee's latest win and so far from what you've seen from Tennessee basketball through the first four games?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're a fan or if you're, you know, watching closely, if you're on the staff, I think you're encouraged because you're seeing things that you've been emphasizing after each game. I think you're seeing guys get a little bit better, you know, not just guys, but the team get a little bit better collectively. You know, their rebounding wasn't great first game. That was, they got better. Turnovers, you know, were an issue. They've improved on it. Offensive chemistry and shot selection, that kind of thing, I think has really gotten better, you know, each game, to, you know, culminating, you know, yesterday. It was a clinic against Austin Peay, like over 60% for the game, 70% in the first half. And that's an outlier. That's an anomaly. But to, you know, do that at this early stage of the season with three new transfers in the lineup, starting lineup that are veterans who are playing heavy minutes, I mean, I think that's a real positive sign right now.
Igor Milicic went off last night or two nights ago, I guess, 23 points, 9 total rebounds. He shot the ball 11 of 14 from the field. You know, Chaz Lanier didn't do an awful lot, but it feels like, you know, Igor's playing here really, really well to begin the season. Cade Phillips coming off the bench. What have you seen from some of these new guys with Milicic, Okpara, some of these new guys, Lanier, as they try to transition into their new roles?
Yeah, I mean, just impressed with those guys. I mean, and people, you know, might look at Chaz's box score the other day and, you know, say, you know, he didn't score and, you know, Milicic, you know, did this or that. I mean, I was impressed by the fact that, you know, he didn't have it. It was tougher in that game and he didn't force it. I mean, he's a guy that's, you know, looked at as a scorer, been a scorer all his life. I mean, he played 30 minutes and only took 6 shots. I mean, it just, you know, it wasn't him. He didn't press. He didn't worry about hunting his offense. And, you know, Milicic, I mean, and showed the versatility. I think that everybody's kind of been hitting that they've been seeing from him. And again, that's Austin Peay. You don't want to get too carried away. But, you know, at the bottom line, he's a 6'9", 6'10 guy that can score from a lot of different places on the floor. You know, he can bang in the paint. He's really, you know, creative and crafty with the way that he can finish around the basket and just unique. I mean, Tennessee's really not had a guy like him.
Vols going to the Bahamas this weekend. Virginia's coming up on Thursday, and then on Friday they'll play either St. John's or Baylor. What's the week kind of look like for Tennessee in that regard? And obviously, what type of opportunities lie ahead down in the Bahamas?
We'll have media with the team this morning before they leave. They'll practice in Knoxville on Tuesday afternoon, then hop a plane, get down there. Wednesday will be pretty easy. I mean, they'll have a walkthrough and do some fun stuff. You know, do some photo stuff with the other teams. And then Thursday, late night, I mean, that's kind of a weird day for the team. They play it at 9:30 our time. So, you know, how they handle all that, you know, being around the resort, staying loose, but, you know, not just, you know, being utterly bored or staying on, you know, your iPad all day long, staying engaged will be a challenge. But first game for Virginia, you know, Tony Bennett obviously left them in a lurch, retiring a few minutes ago. And, you know, that would be what they beat Villanova, you know, over the weekend. So I wouldn't say that the cupboard is completely bare, but you'd expect Tennessee to be a pretty substantial favorite in that one. And then they'll catch a good team in second game, regardless. St. John's ranked, you know, in between 20 and 25 this week, depending on what poll you're looking at. Baylor, you know, pretty good team, right around the top 10, right, similar to Tennessee. So they'll get a challenge in the second game for sure.
So Tennessee basketball continues on here in the early season. Tennessee football out the door. Austin, a quick recruiting note, getting set up for a big official visit come UTEP week this weekend.
Well, yeah, DeJuan Morris will be here for his official visit, and we'll kind of see where things go with him. You know, things have been trending in the right direction, but it's not done. Got to get that one across the finish line. Isaiah Campbell, you know, still kind of waiting to hear kind of, you know, his take out of the North Carolina visit. I know North Carolina feels confident, much like Tennessee has felt confident the last month or so. But, you know, North Carolina is a school that's just down the road. That's why in the war room we had, you know, you have to – you really account for them. They're, you know, it's not just some lay down that he's coming to Tennessee, that staying close to home could prove to be, you know, something that happens. And so we'll see. To me, it definitely is just a two-team race at this point, Tennessee or North Carolina. And I think he's kind of went into the decision mode here as he hopes to decide something before the calendar turns to December, in my opinion. And then, you know, with, you know, Jaden Perlotti, you know, again, Tennessee's right there in the thick of it. You know, it boils down to, is he going to flip from Southern Cal? If he flips, I think Tennessee's got a really good shot. If not, then, you know, obviously not.
Austin, are you a little surprised we haven't heard more portal chatter in terms of guys going into the portal?
Or you mean from Tennessee?
Just in general. I mean, it doesn't – I mean, I know there's been some out there, but it seems – I mean, I know the portal window doesn't open until December 9th. I mean – are you a little surprised there's not more, or is this about on pace and you think you're going to see it that Thanksgiving week and the weekend after the regular season ends?
Well, I think it's definitely coming. I think what you've seen to this point are kids at schools that are not a factor, or kids that, you know, aren't playing, and, you know, it's just easy to go ahead and get your name out there and get in the portal. As far as like the higher end kids at, you know, serious contenders, you know, I think that stuff's going to come. You know, I'm sure Tennessee's going to lose a player or two. Sure. You know. Now the question is it anybody that actually matters? I mean, Tennessee lost some players last year. You know, did it matter? I don't know. I guess time will tell. You know, but, you know, I think the biggest thing is, you know, kind of like, you know, with the basketball team, you know, they lost Jonas Adu. They replaced him with Felix Akpara. You know, I mean, they were able to, you know, fill that void, so to speak. So, you know, can Tennessee fill the void if they lose a player or two? And just, can they fill some voids that they have heading into 2025?
Something we asked Matt on the Rocky Top Rewind, with signing day, that window being moved up to the beginning of the month, is that going to help teams to hold on? Like for Tennessee?
Should.
Yeah, like Gass and Shady and you know, Travis Smith, some of these guys. Or will it increase the aggressiveness of these other teams trying to poach them?
I mean, the answer can be both. I mean, you know, you have less time. So, like, Tennessee knows, like, if you're going to flip Perlotti, if you're going to flip DeJuan Morris, you know, you've got less time to do that than before. Like, you don't have that extra couple of weeks in the month of December. So, but I do think that, you know, it you know, when you're trying to hold on to a kid, it definitely helps. It, like, man, it's just 14 less days that you got to sit here and babysit the phone. But guess what? At the end of the day, if a kid comes here and he doesn't like it, he's going to leave anyways. It's not like the old days where you can, you know, you're bound through your first year, you're bound, you know, all this stuff. Like, you can just kind of come and go as you please.
A lot going on right now is football season. The regular season is inching towards a conclusion. Basketball season's heating up. It's about to be silly season as well here in the coming weeks with signing day and, of course, transfer portal and all that. No better place to be caught up on all that and so much more than over at VolQuest.com and joining the conversation every day on the General's Quarters. Big thanks, as always, to our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions for being the presenting sponsor of the show. That phone number is 865-524-5888. Website is exteriorhomesolutions.com. They've been local and trusted for 25 years, since 1999, for siding, windows, roofing, garage, all that and more here in East Tennessee. That is Exterior Home Solutions. For Austin Price, Rob Lewis, Brent Hubbs, I'm Eric Kane. Appreciate you guys for joining us here on the Tuesday morning VolQuest podcast.
You've been listening to the VolQuest podcast every week here on VolQuest.